I'm Alan Lytle, 91.3 WUKY News. The image of what is a traditional family has been changing over generations. And as part of our coverage of Pride Month, we're taking a closer look at children who grow up in a house with two moms, two dads, or some other combination. It's the topic of this week's edition of Dr. Greg Davis on Medicine. Dr. Rachel Farr is with UK's Department of Psychology and Gender and Women's Studies. She's also the director of the FAD Lab, which stands for Families, Adoption, and Diversity. She recently spoke with Dr. Greg about her evidence-based research regarding children who are adopted into non-traditional families.
We're here in the Department of Psychology and Arts and Sciences, and my own area of specialty is developmental psychology. So we really are focused on children's development, and in this case, in the context of diverse families. And diversity, of course, can mean a lot of different things. In our lab, we particularly study families that are headed by LGBTQ parents or lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer parents, as well as adoptive family systems, so in which parents may not be the biological parents of their children.
And a lot of what you do is you utilize what we call in medicine evidence-based research. Mm-hmm. And so on the one hand, we have the obvious emotional issues that come along when any of us discuss families, children, yes, the types of parents we think should be raising kids. But what are some of the things that your prospective research has found in looking at these families?
Yeah. So some of the big take-home messages that I think are really important, kind of in terms of those broad brushstrokes of outcomes, is that regardless of sort of the family structure, so for example, regardless of whether kids have two moms, two dads, or a mom and a dad, these are all kids who are generally thriving. They have low levels of behavior problems. On average, the behavioral adjustment does not differ depending on who the parents are. It really comes down to more what's happening within the family. So the quality of parenting, the quality of family relationships, and none of that should be shocking to anyone. I mean, the quality of parenting and relationships certainly matter. So when parents have lower levels of stress, when parents are happier in their couple relationships, for example, those things mean good things for their kids.
So it's less, and I'm paraphrasing here, mm-hmm, but as I'm hearing this, it's less about the parents being LGBTQ or cisgender, heterosexual. It's more about, do you have meals together? Do you read to the kids at night?
Exactly.
All those things that we've grown up and as parents have realized probably did pretty good things for our kids.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, good parenting is good parenting, sort of across the board. And yes, when kids are in happy, healthy, loving homes, that seems to be, of course, what matters most. And that's not to say that these families all have identical experiences. There certainly are experiences that are going to be unique for families that have adopted children and families that have LGBTQ parents. But those unique, you know, identities don't necessarily translate to differences in the broad psychological adjustment outcomes.
I'm of a certain age, and so if a kid in my grade school or high school class had a non-traditional family, mm-hmm, traditional in the sense of cisgender, mm-hmm, you know, male-female parents, that was sort of a thing. You know, we stood up and took notice. Are today's generations of grade school, middle school, high school kids, is this so, I guess the way I'm trying to frame this is, it's so prevalent now, it's probably not even on their radar, or is this still an issue in, right, in those, for those kids'
yeah,
lives?
I think there are two parallel dynamics going on in terms of attitudinal change, as well as continuing you know, bias and discrimination. So on the one hand, it is the case that Americans have become increasingly favorable towards LGBTQ people and their families. And that goes for young people all the way up through sort of the lifespan. But we know particularly young people have favorable attitudes. So I think this bodes well for as time goes on. I think, you know, some things may feel more normalized, so to speak, or non-traditional or diverse families are going to see more familiar. But at the same time, we still know that stigma and discrimination are rampant when kids and adults, for that matter, run into, you know, families and people who are different than they are. And in fact, some other work going on in our lab, in collaboration with some of my colleagues in our psychology department, we've demonstrated that elementary school-age children who don't have same-sex parents, they do show bias towards kids who have same-sex parents. Mm-hmm. So, for example, they're more likely to report wanting to be friends with kids that have heterosexual parents over kids that have two moms or two dads. And this is something that's occurring even though those same kids don't even really know how to define what gay means. So it's sort of before they have the language for what that identity represents, they have internalized various sorts of stereotypes and stigma and discrimination towards diverse families.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, is this obviously is not intrinsic to that child. This is something they've absorbed or through osmosis from adults around them?
Yes, and not necessarily only adults around them, but it's a cultural phenomenon. These values around sort of who the ideal or normal family, normal in quotes, is you know, ingrained in media messages, in the news, in what they might run into at schools with their peers, with their teachers, with their parents. So the list goes on and on. And so it's not necessarily to place blame on, you know, any one particular party, but just that, you know, culturally speaking, I think we have a lot of room to grow.
Sure. Is there anything we've not discussed that you would want our neighbor?
Our neighbors.
is there anything we've not discussed that you would want our listeners to know in addition?
Yeah. Well, I think that it's just so important that, like, the bottom line here is that since a lot of my research does focus on adoption, I'm often, I have in mind that there are many thousands of children within our own country who are currently awaiting adoptive placement and are in need of loving homes. And currently, we still have a variety of states that either have bills proposed or do have current legislation, these so-called religious freedom bills that do prohibit or potentially set up obstacles for LGBTQ people to foster or adopt children, because adoption agencies, particularly those that may be religiously affiliated, are given grounds to discriminate on the basis of their moral and religious beliefs, which often could mean on the basis of parent sexual orientation. So what I'd like to put out there is that the research that I've done, and with many of my colleagues in this field, the research demonstrates no empirical basis for discriminating on parent sexual orientation in decisions related to adoption. And so we're doing a disservice to children in the end if we're barring potentially capable adoptive parents who should be eligible. You know, we're setting up a system where kids might be disadvantaged and don't get to their homes.
My thanks today to Dr. Rachel Farr of the Department of Psychology for talking with me about the Families, Adoption, and Diversity Laboratory. For more information, visit our website at wuky.org. With health news you can use, I'm Dr. Greg Davis on Medicine.
Dr. Greg Davis is a forensic pathologist at the University of Kentucky who volunteers his time to cover important medical news for our community. This program is available as a podcast at wuky.org. And for information on becoming an underwriter, contact Gail Bennett at 257-7049.